Shraddha and going for refuge. And there'll be a bit of a focus on the volitional Shraddha during that talk. Then we'll, after the talk, we'll have some discussion. We'll have a question answer session, some discussion. And then we'll do a short ritual, our final ritual of the retreat. That'll be a threefold puja. And then we'll have a chance to, if you like, check out, have a final breakout group, just to talk about, share our experiences and anything we've got from the retreat, taking it forward. Then we'll have a plenary. We'll come together again after those breakout groups, and we'll have a concluding ritual to say goodbye, really, and to go forth. And just, there'll be some concluding remarks after that. So that's the schedule, finishing around 5:30. We've been talking about Shraddha as a capacity to respond, a capacity for us to turn toward, to recognize the truth, what's value, what's of value, to turn towards that and to respond to it. And I mentioned the other day when I was introducing the Tiratna Vandana in the morning that the writings about the Buddha, about his life, about his teachings were written down in the first century BC in the Pali language. And in these accounts of the Buddha, you come across many stories where he's wandering, as he did in northern India for about 50 years, teaching the Dharma after his enlightenment. And he bumps into people, sometimes just out of the blue, and they see him with the eyes of faith. They recognize that something in them intuits his worth, his value, his wisdom. And he gives them a teaching, and it kind of blows them away. And often, time and time again, there's this kind of response that the hearer gives after listening to a teaching from the mouth of the very Buddha himself. And it goes like this. So this is an example of one particular case, but it kind of illustrates a bit of a formula. And in this case, the recipient of the teaching is a Brahmin student called Subha. So here goes, from the Pali Canon. So he's heard a teaching. And then he says, when this was said, the Brahmin student Subha, Tudeya's son, said to the Blessed One, "Magnificent Master Gotama, magnificent Master Gotama. Master Gotama has made the Dhamma clear in many ways, as though he were turning upright what has been turned over. He is revealing what was hidden, showing the way to one who was lost, or holding up a lamp in the dark for those with eyes to see." And as I say, this is typical of a response of faith within the Pali Canon. And usually it's followed very quickly afterwards by a request from the recipient. And Subha is again typical. He says, "I go to Master Gotama for refuge," he says, "and to the Dhamma and to the Sangha of bhikkhus. Let Master Gotama remember me as a lay follower who has gone to him for refuge for life." So he puts a request to the Buddha. "Will you accept me as one of your disciples? Can I join your Sangha?" So it's like you have the act of faith, and then following on very quickly after is this response, which is going for refuge. He asks to be taken in by the Buddha. And we all go for refuge, don't we? In our various ways. we're all faced with this existential predicament of needing to seek a sense of safety and security, a sense of consolation and for the difficulties of life, the challenges of life. In the face of life's insecurities and anxieties, you know, whether it's the day-to-day wraps and cut and thrust of life, or whether it's those bigger picture anxieties, death, for example. Of course, COVID has been such a reminder of the ungovernability of the lives we lead. Maybe those among us here have, maybe you've lost friends or family or income. But we've all lost some freedoms for sure. Freedoms perhaps we took for granted, like movement, the possibility of just moving around wherever we want. And association, these basic human freedoms, you know. I'm certainly suffering from home deprivation. And of course, there's a sense of our the fragility of our social institutions as well that COVID has reminded us about. You know, I remember that point going into Waitrose from the Buddhist Centre and seeing empty shelves, empty food shelves. That was very early on when there was this panic buying going on. And I was like, oh, I remember the feeling of what I take for granted when I go into a Waitrose, there's going to be food on the shelves. And then there's, you know, the West London Buddhist Centre, there's a question mark over its future. So, you know, these insecurities have entered our lives, these uncertainties. These are perhaps the words that we've been hearing most over the past 3 months, are uncertainty. I don't know how many times I've heard the word unprecedented on the news. So what are our, against, in the face of all these uncertainties, what are our sources of security? And you could say there are certain standard default refuges available to us. You know, it might be the job, the status that comes with that, maybe the income, the wealth that we get from the job. It may be pleasure. And pleasure can be a kind of a refuge in two ways. It can be a distraction from the insecurity. You know, sex, food, entertainment can all be a strategy of distraction. Or it may be that it actually bolsters this fragile ego, our identity, in that it pleasure gives us a sense, it gives a very viscerally a sense that we're on the winning side in against the forces of disruption and decay. So pleasure can provide a kind of temporary bulwark against uncertainty. Of course, the problem with all these defaults, these default refuges, is that they're not reliable. So what is reliable in the long term? What is reliable? And of course, as Buddhists, we believe that what is reliable is what is a true refuge, what is a safe refuge, is of course the three jewels. So from the Dhammapada, she who goes for refuge to the enlightened one, to the truth, and to the spiritual community, and who sees with perfect wisdom the four Aryan truths, namely suffering, the origin of suffering, the passing beyond suffering, and the Aryan truth, sorry, the Aryan Eightfold Way, leading to the pacification of suffering. This is a safe refuge. This is the best refuge. Having gone to such a refuge, one is released from all suffering. So, you know, this is the basic teaching, that our quintessential Buddhist act is to go for refuge to the three jewels, the Buddha, the origin of the teaching, the Dharma, the teaching itself, and the Sangha, the community who share the teaching and who support each other in practicing. And of course, our organization under which, you know, the West London Buddhist Center runs, the Tri Ratna Buddhist community, that's three jewels, Tri Ratna. And we have been chanting in the mornings the Tiratna Vandana, so that's Pali, T is three, Ratna is dual. And we describe them as jewels because, well, jewels are what are most valuable, you could say. People could tell us, oh, the three jewels, that's what you need. That'll sort you out. Go for the three jewels. As much as they like, we're not actually going to buy into that unless Shraddha actually shows us, confirms for us that, yes, these are what are reliable refuges. So unless we have that intuition of value that gives us the initial impulse to turn towards the truth, and then following on from that, the cognitive faith, which turns us towards the truth with our minds, and then the effective faith, turning towards the three jewels with our hearts, and then the volitional faith of effective turning towards. Otherwise we're not going to. But this, of course, is the strength of the Dharma, that it is there to be tested, to be tried and tested, and to verify for ourselves in our own experience. And that gives us a solidity behind the faith and our turning towards or going for refuge to the three jewels. So I want to pick up on volitional faith. So I described it there, going from affective faith, which turns towards the truth, the three jewels with our hearts, to volitional faith, which is going from affective to effective turning towards. I'm playing with words a little bit here, but it's like this particular aspect of faith, the volitional faith, which I'm focusing on now, is about making faith effective. It's about, the nuts and bolts. So yes, we've turned towards it, our heart is engaged in it, but now what do we do with that? And if we really hold it as a value, if it is where our heart is, then we're going to invest in it, in a sense. We're going to invest time, we're going to invest effort in that. If you'll excuse me using a biblical quote again, the kingdom of heaven is like treasure in a field, which a man found and covered up. Then in his joy, he goes and sells all that he has and buys that field. So that's what we do. When we find something that's totally worth investing in, we make every effort. We will turn any corner in order to invest in that. And what does that mean, investing in our values, in our ideals? Well, in a word, going for refuge. No, not even three words. Going for refuge. Okay, let's get it down to one word. From three words, going for refuge, to one word. Commitment. I'm simplifying here, but at least I think it's useful to get this phrase, which you probably hear quite often, going for refuge, and it can simply become a kind of jargon. So I think it's really useful to make it a little bit more concrete. Commitment, the C word. And of course, there are different levels of going for refuge. There are different levels of commitment. So, you know, we talk about taking the refuges. So just chanting. Usually somebody leads a chant and then we follow. And that's taking the refuges, usually combined with reciting the precepts. And that can be quite a profound act in its own way, or it can be just like any other ritual, just a perfunctory formality. And it could be that we turn to the three jewels, we take refuge on a kind of ad hoc basis, sheltering from a storm. I mean, the question is, you know, this chap that we heard about at the beginning, the Brahmin student Subha, was he still there in the Buddhist community with the Buddha a month down the road or a year down the road? I don't know. Maybe there's an account of whether he got enlightened or not. But we don't know. I don't know. Maybe he did stick in there. But there are so many levels of going for refuge. It's like a process and one of development. It's not something static. You don't just go for refuge and that's it. Where it tends towards in terms of progression is this sense of effective going for refuge. What does that mean? It means going for refuge that actually changes us. Changes us and changes through changing us, changing the world that we live in. I'll say a bit more about that. But first, let me say something about commitment. The big word, the C word. I'd like to quote something about commitment. So first of all, I'd say that commitment is about opening the doors of possibility. And often if we commit to a project, maybe you've had this experience yourself. If you commit to a project, something happens. There are possibilities open. The universe seems to conspire to advance the project. It's like there's some magic kicks in as a result of you making a decision. I'm going to go for this. So this is a quote from W.H. Murray in his book, The Scottish Himalaya Expedition, 1951. And he's quoting in the book from Faust. Okay, here goes, about commitment. Until one is committed, there is hesitancy, the chance to draw back, always ineffectiveness. Concerning all acts of initiative and creation, there is one elementary truth, the ignorance of which kills countless ideas and splendid plans. That the moment one definitely commits oneself, providence moves too. A whole stream of events issues from the decision, raising in one's favor all manner of unforeseen incidents, meetings, and material assistance, which no one could have dreamt would have come their way. I learned a deep respect for one of Goethe's couplets. Whatever you can do or dream you can, begin it. So whatever you can do or dream you can, begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it. So if you've got a project in the wings, just commit to it, initiate it, and let it fly. So commitment, in terms of going for refuge, really is very much about reorientating our lives, aligning ourselves with the truth. So recognizing, for example, conditionality, that in order for us to progress from this seed or this acorn that is Shraddha to wisdom, as Prajnanita was talking about earlier, we have to put conditions in place. We have to recognize where we are now and get a sense of, okay, what conditions will help me to push forward in my spiritual life, step by step, rather than saying, oh, I want to get enlightened next week. Let's just take it one step at a time. There's this joke about in Ireland where somebody asks, okay, I need to get to Stillorgan, it's 5 miles away, and how do I get there? And then the person who's the local who's being asked scratches his head and says, I wouldn't start from here. Anyway, we have to start from where we are in terms of, there's a book, isn't there, to start from where you are. It might be Pema Chodron. We have to take account of where we are. And however magnificent our ideal, and the Buddhist ideals are magnificent, enlightenment is a magnificent ideal, we need to take it stepwise, creating the conditions for growth. And those, of course, are, you know, the Buddha is very clear about what they are, following the Eightfold Path, right vision, right emotion, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right mindfulness, right concentration, which another way of summarizing our ethics, meditation, and wisdom. And we could say that primary there, the most accessible tool in the toolbox is ethics, ethical behavior, the precepts. And Sangharacha describes going for refuge as, if you like, the lifeblood of the Buddhist. This commitment is the lifeblood of any Buddhist. And it's the circulation of the blood which is ethical behavior. So ethical behavior is a circulation of the blood. Without that ethical behavior, without that circulation, the blood just congeals and is useless. So I've described going for refuge ideally as effective. That commitment, this is what commitment gives, is effectiveness. And how do we measure that? How do we recognize what is effective going for refuge? Well, you judge a tree by its fruits. There may be, for example, there's a little list given by Sangharacha of if you're looking for the signs of effective going for refuge. It says, first of all, there's less focus on oneself and one's own needs and wants. There's a simpler living, if you like, because of that. And more harmonious as well, because you're looking after the needs more of the people around you, not just focusing on your own. He says, secondly, there's a sensitivity to the spiritual. It's like you've got your spiritual antennae fine, well tuned, and your spiritual muscles are trained. Particularly, you know, meditation develops those awareness muscles. And thirdly, he says, well, you're happier, you're more content because you sit more loosely to the external world. And the worldly winds, if you like, the success and the failure, the praise and the blame. You just sit more lightly to all of this. So you're more content, less stressed, and less attached. And this, of course, leads to a freer life. I was reminded by Pranyanita when she told us that little story of the Czech fairy tale, when she mentioned the flower singing its song in the night, quivering and fragrancing the night. That image reminded me of a fifth century philosopher called Proclus. He was a Neoplatonist. And he wrote, one of the pieces of writing that have come down to us from him is that the prayer of the sunflower. And an extract from that prayer of the sunflower is, the sunflower moves with what makes it open as much as it can. And if one could hear how it makes the air vibrate as it turns around, one could realize from the sound that it is making a hymn to its king. So it's like the sunflower is turning to the sun and sings a hymn of praise and longing, and it's kind of quivering, vibrating with this kind of hymn. And in a sense, that's what we are. That's what we're doing. That's what all beings maybe are doing. We turn to the sun, what is truly of value. And this, you could say, is another way of looking at faith. Faith is what helps us through intuition to turn towards what is of value, to point towards that fundamental orientation of our being, that are achieving our fullest potential. And I would say that this is why I'm on the planet, really. This is my raison d'etre. Is to constantly orientate towards that sun of meaning, to live from Shraddha. And this is volitional Shraddha, and I would say kind of very much overlaps and is paired with going for refuge. So I don't have a sense that in my own life I need to achieve a hell of a lot. If I just turn towards the sun of the three jewels, and in a sense it doesn't, The distance between me and the goal is less relevant than the fact that my faith is alive and it's orientating me in that direction. this for me is you know, if that's all I do, well, I do see that as a fulfillment, at least to some degree, of my humanity. And that for me is making the air vibrate with a hymn of praise to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Okay, we shall break up into groups now to have a sharing on the basis of that input.
I think we won't just break into groups, but we will do that together.
Let me see what. I thought, groups would be good.
Yeah.
Let me see. Have I got the right? Oh, sorry. You're right. I was looking at the wrong day again. Okay. Yeah. No. Let's do it together. Thank you, friend Yanita. You're right. So open forum. Was there anything there that resonated? Threefold puja. Opening reverence. We reverence the Buddha.
We reverence the Buddha.
The perfectly enlightened one.
The perfectly enlightened one.
The shower of the way.
The shower of the way.
We reverence the Dharma.
We reverence the Dharma.
The teaching of the Buddha.
The teaching of the Buddha.
Which leads from darkness to light.
Which leads from darkness to light.
We reverence the Sangha.
We reverence the Sangha.
The fellowship of the Buddha's disciples.
The fellowship of the Buddha's disciples.
That inspires and guides.
That inspires and guides.
Namo Tassa.
Namo Tassa.
Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa.
Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa.
Namo Tassa.
Namo Tassa.
Bhagavato Arahato.
Bhagavato Arahato
Sammasambuddhassa.
Sammasambuddhassa.
Namo Tassa.
Namo Tassa.
Bhagavato Arahato.
Bhagavato Arahato.
Sammasambuddhassa.
Sammasambuddhassa.
Buddhang Saranang Gacchami.
Buddhang Saranang Gacchami.
Dhammang Saranang Gacchami.
Dharmang Saranang Gacchami.
Sanghang Saranang Gacchami.
Sanghang Saranang Gacchami.
Dutyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami.
Dutyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami.
Dutyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami.
Dutyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami.
Dutyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami.
Dutyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami.
Tatyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami.
Tatyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami.
Tatyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami.
Tatyampi Dharmang Saranang Gacchami.
Tatyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami.
Tatyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami.
Panatipata.
Panatipata.
Verimini.
Verimini.
Sikkhapadang.
Sikkhapadang.
Samadhiyami.
Samadhiyami.
Adinadana.
Adinadana.
Verimini.
Vermani.
Sikkhapadang.
Sikkhapadang.
Samadhiyami.
Samadhiyami.
Kamesu.
Kamesu.
Michachara.
Michachara.
Vermani.
Vermani.
Sikkhapadang.
Sikkhapadang.
Samadhiyami.
Samadhiyami.
Musavada.
Musavada.
Vermani.
Vermani.
Sikkhapadang.
Sikkhapadang.
Samadhiyami.
Samadhiyami.
Suramariya.
Suramariya.
Majja.
Majja.
Pamadatana.
Pamadatana.
Vermani.
Vermani.
Sikkhapadang.
Sikkhapadang.
Samadhiyami.
Samadhiyami.
Sadhu.
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 With deeds of loving kindness.
With deeds of loving kindness.
I purify my body.
I purify my body.
With open-handed generosity.
With open-handed generosity.
I purify my body.
I purify my body.
With stillness, simplicity, and contentment.
With stillness, simplicity, and contentment.
I purify my body.
I purify my body.
With truthful communication.
With truthful communication.
I purify my speech.
I purify my speech.
With mindfulness clear and radiant.
With mindfulness clear and radiant.
I purify my mind.
I purify my mind.
Reverence to the Three Jewels. We reverence the Buddha.
We reverence the Buddha.
And aspire to follow him.
And aspire to follow him.
The Buddha was born as we are born.
The Buddha was born as we are born.
What the Buddha overcame.
What the Buddha overcame.
We too can overcome.
We too can overcome.
What the Buddha attained.
What the Buddha attained.
We too can attain.
We too can attain.
We reverence the Dharma.
We reverence the Dharma.
And aspire to follow it.
And aspire to follow it.
With body, speech, and mind.
With body, speech, and mind.
Until the end.
Until the end.
The truth in all its aspects.
The truth in all its aspects.
The path in all its stages.
The path in all its stages.
We aspire to study, practice, realize.
We aspire to study, practice, realize.
We reverence the Sangha.
We reverence the Sangha.
And aspire to follow it.
And aspire to follow it.
The fellowship of those who tread the way.
The fellowship of those who tread the way.
As one by one, we make our own commitment.
As one by one, we make our own commitment.
An ever-widening circle.
An ever-widening circle.
The Sangha grows.
The Sangha grows.
This is a reading from a practitioner, a very famous practitioner, whose photograph we saw on Friday night, I think it was, or maybe it was yesterday morning, I'm losing track of time. Pranyanita showed us some images, it was yesterday morning, of various practitioners. And you could see the kind of their practice was etched in their faces, those beautiful, smiling, quite old faces. And one of them was this individual called Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche, one of the foremost Tibetan teachers of the last century. It's from his book called The Heart Treasure of the Enlightened Ones. And this section is called Taking Refuge is the Gateway to the Dharma. It is common to all three vehicles, and as it is the foundation on which all practice depends. The attitude to samsara that motivates people to take refuge, however, is not always the same. To be afraid of suffering in samsara, and therefore to take refuge for one's own sake, would be an inferior motivation. The best motivation would be to wish to liberate all sentient beings completely from the suffering of samsara and establish them in the state of enlightenment. To take refuge with this thought is the attitude of the Mahayana. If the taking of refuge is to be genuine and true, unshakable faith needs to be developed. Faith is a vital element in the path, opening us to the Buddha's blessings. Expecting to attain realization without having faith would be like sitting in a north-facing cave waiting for the sunshine to pour in. There are four stages in the development of faith: clear faith, longing faith, confident faith, and irreversible faith. When you first realize what wonderful and extraordinary qualities the Buddha Chenrezig, and Chenrezig, his name will come to me, and your teacher possesses, your mind becomes very clear and joyful. This is clear faith. When this clear faith inspires you to obtain Chenrezig's perfect qualities for yourself, and you think what an infinite number of beings you would be able to help if you only had these qualities, it has become longing faith. When you know with complete certainty that Chenrezig's qualities are truly as they were described by the Buddha himself, it has become confident faith. Finally, when faith has become so much a part of yourself that even at the cost of your own life, there is no way you would ever renounce it, it is then irreversible faith. When your faith reaches this point, whatever circumstances you may meet, you will always be completely confident, thinking, Chenrezig, you know everything. No matter what happens, I rely entirely upon your wisdom and compassion. From then on, the blessings and guidance of Chenrezig will always be with you. And there is no doubt that even the sound of his name will have the power to free you from the lower realms. It is this irreversible faith that is needed for the taking of refuge to be truly authentic. It would be short-sighted to take refuge for this lifetime only, or just until the end of your present ills. Your commitment should be to take refuge until all sentient beings have attained enlightenment. Offerings to the Buddha. Reverencing the Buddha.
Reverencing the Buddha.
We offer flowers.
We offer flowers.
Flowers that today are fresh and sweetly blooming.
Flowers that today are fresh and sweetly blooming.
Flowers that tomorrow are faded and fallen.
Flowers that tomorrow are faded and fallen.
Our bodies too, like flowers, will pass away.
Our bodies too, like flowers, will pass away.
Reverencing the Buddha.
Reverencing the Buddha.
We offer candles.
We offer candles.
To him who is the light, we offer light.
To him who is the light, we offer light.
From his greater lamp, a lesser lamp, we light within us.
From his greater lamp, a lesser lamp, we light within us.
The lamp of Bodhi shining within our hearts.
The lamp of Bodhi shining within our hearts.
Reverencing the Buddha.
Reverencing the Buddha.
We offer incense.
We offer incense.
Incense whose fragrance pervades the air.
Incense whose fragrance pervades the air.
The fragrance of the perfect life.
The fragrance of the perfect life.
Sweeter than incense.
Sweeter than incense.
Spreads in all directions.
Spreads in all directions.
Throughout the world.
Throughout the world. Om ma hum vajra guru padma siddhi hum om ma hum om ma hum om ma hum vajra guru padma siddhi hum om ma hum om ma hum om ma hum vajra guru padma siddhi hum om ma hum om ma hum Om ma hum vajra guru padma siddhi hum om ma hum om ma hum om ma hum vajra guru padma siddhi hum om ma hum om ma hum om ma hum vajra guru padma siddhi hum om ma hum om ma hum Om ma hum vajra guru padma siddhi hum om ma hum om ma hum om ma hum vajra guru padma siddhi hum om ma hum om ma hum om ma hum vajra guru padma siddhi hum om ma hum om ma Om ma hum vajra guru padma siddhi hum om ma
And it entails a series of verses which are about really what I talked about when we performed the dedication ritual. This is kind of the obverse side, the other side of the dedication ritual. This is us saying, okay, whatever benefits we've accrued from this weekend, whatever efforts we've made and whatever gifts or otherwise we might have learnings we've received, we offer them up for the benefit of all beings. So it's kind of keeping that intention of broadening our sense of who we are and our place in the world, so that it's not just about ourselves. In some ways it is about transforming ourselves, but with a view to that broader picture of transforming the world. So it's called a transference of merits ritual, and it's in call and response. So again, Pranyanita and myself will do it in call and response. Now, what we normally do in the circle in the field is at the end of it, to kind of seal it symbolically, with a very simple symbolic action, is we turn to each other and we bow in recognition of our Sangha, our community, however temporary it has been, just to honour our coming together in this unique group of people. You know, this will never happen again. This has been a unique community. So we bow to each other, and then we simply turn around, and you can do this in your room, and turn whatever direction seems most appropriate. If you've got a shrine, you could get up and bow. And the second bow is to the shrine. So one bow to each other, and then up and bow to the shrine. With a sense, I invite you at least to have a sense of that being an outward gesture. So we've had the inner gesture of gratitude to each other, but then turning around and saying, okay, now we're going out to the world and taking whatever we have received with us, and hopefully changing the world in maybe even just a small way, but very much that sense of going out from the space that we've been in over this weekend. Virtual as it may be, it has been a hard space. So that's the very simple ritual, the chanting in call and response, and then the bowing to each other and turning around and bowing to the world. And then please do come back to the screen. That doesn't take you too far away, but please do, and we'll have some final comments to finish off. Transference of merits and self-surrender. May the merit gained
in my acting thus
go to the alleviation of the suffering of all beings my personality throughout my existences
my possessions
and my merit in all three ways
I give up without regard to myself
for the benefit of all beings
just as the earth and other elements
are serviceable in many ways
to the infinite number of beings
inhabiting limitless space
so may I become
that which maintains all beings
situated throughout space
So long as all have not attained
to peace.